I think we should.
Oh, here he comes! Minister!
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 How are you? Minister! How's your wife?
Answer the question, Minister!
Counterclockwise, thanks to scoop.co.nz.
Are you there, Lyndon?
I am. Hello, John.
Lovely. Hello there to you, and welcome to the show. You're in for Selwyn every alternate week now, so I'm looking forward to our new relationship. We want to talk this week about Nationals' action plans. I guess the first question that I've got for you is, what do you see as the most alarming thing there that they're drawing up?
Well, funnily enough, I think you may as well start with the number one on the list, which, it's kind of one of these good thing, bad things. It says, halve the budget deficit next year and be back in surplus by 2014-15. That's a bit of a novelty there, just because it's a thing with a target and a deadline. Mm. There's a few of those in there, but most of them are just actions. And this one particularly, because it's a target and a deadline that when I asked him about it at one of these press conferences launching the coalition deals, he kind of didn't actually promise to achieve it, because as we've just had the Crown accounts and the Treasury predictions have both just been cut down in terms of the expected performance of the economy. Mm. But of course, a lot of that budget control isn't so much improving the economy as just reducing government spending,
yeah.
which is a kind of overall program. And so there's some of the other targets are all having all the departments have their four-year spending cap plans ready and so on, and then they've been aiming more or less for a zero increase budget.
Yeah.
Or something that looks very like one, both these things, earthquake aside.
It's kind of weird how they're kind of making these predictions, like we'll do this and we'll cut the deficit and we'll get to this point, when the rest of the world's telling us that the financial systems looks, I mean, I'm not an economist, but from the outside looking in, it looks like it's starting to implode and we're going to get sucked into that. And so to me, when they start making these predictions, if you like, it just seems a bit, well, yeah, that's on a straight road, but the road isn't always straight, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the whole, election campaign billboard with, you know, recover the economy sooner or whatever it was, and just look at it and go, sooner than what? I can't hold you to this. What are you talking about? But yes, I mean, it does mean more austerity, possibly, you know, not as much as is being faced in Europe and the UK and places like that, but there is plenty of argument as to whether that's the way to go if you've got a grand plan for fixing things.
Yeah.
Other highlights, your BFM listeners might actually be interested in the starting out wage that they're looking at expanding. This is more or less a special minimum wage for anyone, well, possibly even below 20 or something, coming into a new job, possibly their first job. I think if you're under 18, any new job, even if you change it, you can be paid a cut minimum wage for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
It's a bit like 90-day trials, but for an entire class of people.
So what a national, suggesting that this made even longer than, because is it? Correct me if I'm wrong, but is it at 90 days at present?
That's the trial hiring period.
Yeah.
So you can be dismissed more or less at the whim of the employer. This is more about the amount that you can be paid.
Yeah.
The purpose of this is, and I'll quote, to ensure our young people are not locked out of the job market. There's this interesting tension in the employment plans from National, in that you're constantly driving you know, the way to get employers to hire more people, the only idea you really have is to lower wages. But you are also constantly talking about giving people incentives to get off the benefits, so you keep cutting benefits as well.
Yeah.
Or applying more rigorous measures to force people off benefits if you can get them off them. So that's an interesting, well, you know, if you were inclined, you could regard it as a virtuous cycle, but...
Yeah. We also had this bit that's come up yesterday, you know, pushed by the ACT Party, those rascals, charter schools. What do you make of that?
I'm aware that Rob Felmond on the Pundit blog has a nuanced opinion that's probably quite well informed about charter schools. I suspect it can be very good, but as an overall policy, it has a lot of potential problems.
Mm.
And the individual schools can be great, but it looks like on average they're not much of an improvement on a public school system, and probably particularly on New Zealand's at least the way it was before they started trying to introduce standards. And they'll also be making all the schools report publicly against the education standards.
Yeah.
Right. But on the bright side, at least for ACT, we did, someone did point out yesterday that there was actually a public mention of this charter school plan before the election.
Yeah.
All of the press gallery, when they heard about it, were kind of shocked and confused because they had never noticed it, and it wasn't actually in the ACT policy document. So the idea that you would negotiate it in a post-election agreement was a bit of a surprise and didn't strike people as very democratic. But actually, Don Brash did make a speech on the 17th of November, which was, of course, right in the middle of the Teapot tapes scandal. But he spoke at a school and he said that they would be in favour of such a system.
Mm. Yeah, I'd got to say, I mean, watching John Banks this week and last week, I don't know, you know when you were a kid at school and you'd see the bully, there'd be the playground bully, and he'd have this little friend at his side, the one that was kind of smaller and really soft, really, you know, but he'd be standing there like he was the big man on campus. And I don't know, that I'm not saying he is, but John Banks, I don't know, bully's mate.
His main campaign point, whenever it appeared on the television, was that he would be supporting a John Key-led government.
Mm.
You know, quote marks, John Key-led government. That was the phrase that he was repeating over and over again. And the frustrating thing about his interviews since is that he hasn't actually changed his key phrases now that he's become elected, and he just launches determinedly into those phrases again.
Yeah, I just want
quite loudly and assertively. So it's I think it's probably obvious even to bystanders that he's just slipped the question and is saying what he intends to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of, whenever I hear Banks speak, I always think, who's writing his speeches? What is this? Has he got one of those, is it student job search job that, you know, he's got one of those killer, what do they call them, killer bees? God help us if there's a war, a proper one, you know, where they enlist people, because we're not gonna win in that case. But yeah, no, you kind of look at the speech and you go on about, oh well, the birds have now. I hear the sound of feathers flapping. You're like, are you serious?
They did mildly entertain the gallery when he was standing up there for this. This announcement press conference, and he was talking about what, with himself being the only member of the ACT caucus, he was saying that he'd, you know, taken things to caucus and that it had been unanimous that he should be leader and the parliamentary leader of the party, and
yeah.
He was quite sure that, you know, that things would be stable and there'd be no infighting.
I guess it's difficult to have infighting when there's only one
person.
Yeah, it'd be like fighting with yourself. I don't know.
Admittedly, Well, the idea of Banks even arguing with himself is seems quite far-fetched to me.
I guess one other thing, and I we'd probably be remiss not to mention this, is that the fact that mining is back on the agenda, or at least the moving into the national parks.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
It's that's another one that doesn't show up on the list, and it's sort of odd. It came out more or less the day after the election. Mm. I think that I think it's the Denniston mine, the gold mine that they're talking about putting in, that at the very least some of the access roading and things like that would be going over conservation land, and there had been a promise that the public would be consulted over things like that. Mm. And Forest and Bird apparently got a ministerial confirmation that there wouldn't be public consultation on this particular one. So didn't waste any time breaking at least one promise on that one.
It's just, I guess, my wife put it, she explained it quite clearly, or she gave a bit of a theory, if you like, when they initially said we're going to mine in the park. She said, I'll bet you the day that they'll back down on it under public pressure, and the day that they back down, they'll actually bring out some more nefarious or at least unpopular policy. And they did just that. I think it was to do with welfare. And she kind of says the same thing again. She said to me that, yeah, it's just a smokescreen, this. They'll pull it back and they'll introduce something else. And it's funny how at least it came back into the public domain, and now and then a lot of other unpopular policies have also cropped up. I mean, am I being cynical?
My impression at the time was that they really thought they could win at least some ground on the mining issue. I mean, Jerry Brownlee was very, very certain of himself, and yeah. There wasn't sort of any question of middle grounds or anything like that until they just backed off completely in the face of enormous public opposition. So I think it might have been genuine. And if you want to look for policies that should really be unpopular, then in any given period of a month, I'm sure you could find something to satisfy at least one person. I might actually just flipping through this thing on the second page of the post-election action plan is the law and order ones,
yeah.
Which there's just a couple of things that they talked about before the election. Some of the bills that Simon Power, who's of course left now, but he's famous for being an extremely busy minister and just getting a lot of things done irrespective of whether the legal community agreed with them or not.
Yeah.
But one of these ideas is something called civil detention orders, which is where a very small number of high-risk offenders, having served their entire sentence but still being assessed as being at an imminent risk of reoffending, having served their entire sentences, the idea is that you would just keep them in for a little longer until they weren't, or something like that, which is an incredibly radical thing in terms of the justice system. It's a case of imprisoning someone for something that they might do.
Like pre-crime.
Yeah.
There's a film about it.
There's a bit Minority Report in that respect.
Yeah,
they've already obviously committed a number of extremely serious crimes. But there have been plenty of instances in the past where people have retrospectively rewritten sentences so that you have less chance of parole, or the possibility of parole is removed, or can be removed. But the idea of rewriting someone's sentences so that their sentence just gets longer has definitely not been done before in New Zealand.
Well, look, Lyndon, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I think we speak every other week at this point, so thanks for coming on the show, and I hope you have a great day, mate.
Thanks for having me along.
Always a pleasure.
Cheers.
See you, mate.